From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up,
we're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
A promising new timeline, but some states could be acting prematurely.
It is now time to open Texas 100%.
New revelations on the events surrounding the Capitol siege.
At that point, seconds mattered, minutes mattered.
A bombshell interview, accusations of bullying inside Buckingham Palace.
There's a lot that's been lost already.
And two grandparents remind us all to stay safe and get vaccinated.
We're going to wash this year right off of our hands.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues. We could be on the right track. After roughly a year of fighting the COVID-19 pandemic, a third COVID vaccine from Johnson & Johnson got into the arms of Americans this week. Mega sites like Yankee Stadium in New York adding appointments. And according to data from the CDC, an average of 2 million shots per day are being administered. This week, President Biden also announcing a partnership between Johnson & Johnson and Merck, which he says will ramp up supply 2 months ahead of schedule.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
The promising news led some states to roll back COVID restrictions. In Texas and Mississippi, mask mandates are gone. Texas Governor Greg Abbott also says businesses and gatherings will be unrestricted.
It is now time to open Texas 100%.
But doctors and the White House say it's too early to do that. ABC's Whit Johnson reports.
Hundreds in long lines waiting for shots in Florida. The National Guard assisting in Kansas City.
I just want to get a vaccine and one that will work.
Yankee Stadium will be one of the mass vaccination sites offering appointments 24 hours per day. But the overnight appointments are reserved for that new single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Alabama easing restrictions on indoor dining, but keeping its mask mandate for another month. But Mississippi and Texas dropping masks altogether. The Texas governor defending his move after the president called it Neanderthal thinking. Texas has reported more cases in the past week than any other state in the country, nearly 50,000. Dr. Joseph Verone from Houston's United Memorial Medical Center has been on the front lines of the COVID fight for 350 straight days.
Do you think Texas is ready to remove the mask?
Absolutely not. In April, we lifted the restrictions in the state of Texas, and guess what? May, June, and July were the worst months of my life. I signed more death certificates on those 3 months than ever in my entire life.
But he's now worried loosening restrictions could threaten progress.
That light at the end of the tunnel, at least in Texas, just got a little farther away than what it was.
Health experts also warned this week about a possible fourth wave. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said COVID cases are plateauing, hovering at around 60 to 70,000 per day.
Please hear me clearly. At this level of cases with variant spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we have gained.
Still, some folks are expressing cautious optimism. Dr. Anthony Fauci says fully vaccinated people might feel confident about gathering with others who are also fully vaccinated.
Small gatherings in the home of people, I think you can clearly feel that the risk, the relative risk, is so low that you would not have to wear a mask, that you could have a good social gathering within the home.
ABC's Gio Benitez has more on the travel outlook for the summer.
Royal Caribbean saying its newest ship is set to hit the seas in May from Israel. But this time, all passengers must be vaccinated. It's just one of the signs that people are eager to travel. And with the news that the U.S. will have enough vaccine supply for every adult by the end of May, many are already making plans. Dr. Natalie Dean, a biostatistician with the University of Florida, is planning on traveling with her husband and two young children. While her kids won't be vaccinated, she knows children can spread the disease, but points to the data that shows severe illness is less common among young children. In the state's reporting, the American Academy of Pediatrics says up to 2% of child COVID cases result in hospitalization. Dr. David Rubin with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia says he's also feeling hopeful about traveling to see family this summer.
My mother has fully received her vaccinations and it feels safer. And with declining transmission that opportunity is open, not just for my family, but for many families out there, as we encourage our loved ones to get the vaccination.
All six of the experts we talked to agree that being vaccinated is the main factor for safe travel. And they all say they would feel safe traveling by plane while vaccinated and wearing a mask. For now, the CDC is still asking Americans not to travel. No word if that will change by summer with more Americans vaccinated. But experts say even with vaccinations, it's critical that we watch the numbers and keep doing the simple things like wearing masks, washing hands, and spending time outside.
The Biden administration also pushing for schools to reopen safely. The president said he wants teachers to get priority for the vaccine.
My challenge to all states, territories, and the District of Columbia is this. We want every educator, school staff member, child care worker to receive at least one shot by the end of the month of March.
ABC's George Stephanopoulos talked to Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, who was sworn in this week.
Let's talk about reopening schools. You've said it's your top priority. The president promised it in his first 100 days. How close are we to achieving that goal? How long will it take to achieve?
The goal of reopening schools quickly and safely is the priority. And what we're finding is that there are places that are doing it really well, and there are places that need a little bit more support to get it done. But it is our goal in the first 100 days to reopen as many schools as possible, pre-K through 8, but also not forgetting that our high schoolers also need to return back to school safely.
So realistically, we're not going to have all kids in school 5 days a week, some of them some of the time. What exactly do you expect?
You know, I expect that we're going to be focused really intently on making sure we are sharing best practices. You know, the First Lady and I visited two communities, one in Pennsylvania, one in Connecticut, where they're doing an awesome job getting students back into school safely. The educators want that. The parents want that. The students want that. And we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get them in as much as possible, 5 days if possible, to make sure that they're accessing in-person learning. We know students learn best that way.
The president now says it's a priority to get teachers vaccinated in March, but the CDC says vaccinations aren't a prerequisite for return to the classroom. So is it fair to prioritize teachers over other essential workers?
I'm really pleased that the president took that approach. You know, the CDC was very clear, but I also recognize that as a former commissioner in Connecticut, you know, we were seeing that schools were closing not because there was transmission in schools, but because we had to quarantine teachers that might have been exposed, educators, not just teachers, educators, paraeducators, different staff members. So we were finding that schools were closing as a result of quarantining, not COVID transmission. So if we vaccinate our educators, there's a greater likelihood that we're not going to have to close our schools for quarantining because you don't have to quarantine. So for me, this is a positive step in the right direction to reopen our schools safely.
You were a teacher, as you said, you were an administrator as well. What would make you comfortable to be back in a classroom right now?
Listen, George, I'm a father, and I have two children that attend schools, and they've been attending since the beginning of the year. And for me, what I would want for my children is what I would want for all of the children in America. It's to make sure that there are clear mitigation strategies, that they're being enforced, that my students are safe. I wouldn't compromise their health and safety to go into school, but it can be done. We've seen it. There are models across the country that we have to lift.
This pandemic has taken a huge toll on learning, as you know. How much have kids fallen behind over the last year, and how can you fix it?
You know, visiting schools, one thing that really stood out to the First Lady and myself is the sense of community that schools provide. It's not just about reading and math, and it's really about that sense of community, almost like that second family that we know schools provide for our students. That's the priority to get our students back in, and it's something that we have to, as a country, come together and prioritize.
On the jobs front, word this week that February's picture came out better than expected, with 379,000 jobs added. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky.
The hiring in February was better than it has been in any month since October, and the Labor Department said 117,000 more jobs were created in January than previously reported. The unemployment rate dipped to 6.2%. Jobs were added in the leisure and hospitality sector, with smaller gains in temporary help, health care, and retail. The public sector shed jobs, and that offset the overall increase. Millions of Americans are still counting on government assistance to get by.
This as senators took up the debate on the COVID relief bill, but the vote to start the debate ran down party lines. More from ABC's Mary Bruce.
President Biden's massive $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill has finally made its way to the Senate floor. In a sign of the divisions gripping Washington, all Republicans voting against moving forward. Vice President Kamala Harris stepping in to break the tie.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, The nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the motion to proceed is agreed to.
This is the House passed a bill this week that aims to reform police practices.
The George Floyd Justice Bill holds local police accountable, bans chokeholds and no-knock warrants, along with other changes. But
it will not erase centuries of systemic racism and excessive policing, and it will not bring back George Floyd.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi naming other unarmed black victims of excessive force and saying this law helps answer a year of Black Lives Matter protests. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
But the House was out of session Thursday due to a security threat. ABC's Mary Alice Parks says the threat came from far-right groups who believed former President Trump would be back.
ABC News obtaining an internal bulletin from Capitol Police stating an unidentified group of militia violent extremists had discussed plans to take over the U.S. Capitol and remove Democratic lawmakers. The threat linked to far-right conspiracy theories pushed by QAnon, falsely claiming former President Trump would return to Washington on March 4th. And while the claims are false, all threats being seriously considered, especially after the violent siege on the Capitol January 6th.
The police presence at the Capitol isn't going anywhere anytime soon. ABC News Chief Global Affairs Correspondent Martha Raddatz explains.
Law enforcement knows the Capitol remains an attractive target for extremists, which is why the Capitol Police want to keep some portion of the 5,000 National Guard in place until mid-May. And the Secretary of Defense said last month that if lawmakers need protection, the Guard stands ready to provide it. And a Capitol security review will recommend adding roughly 1,000 new Capitol Police and replacing razor wire topped fence with mobile and retractable fencing, so the Capitol grounds will still have what they call an open campus feel when the threat level is reduced. But we are definitely not there yet.
At that point, seconds mattered, minutes mattered, and I needed to be ready to get them there as quick as possible. So I already had District of Columbia National Guard military police vehicle in front of the bus to help get through any traffic lights. Mm-hmm. So we were there in 18 minutes.
That's Major General William Walker, commanding general of the D.C. National Guard, who recounted the timeline of events leading up to and during the Capitol siege January 6th. Walker was one of a handful of law enforcement and military officials who testified before Congress this week and said he waited for hours to get the green light to send his guardsmen to the Capitol complex. Here again, ABC's Aaron Katursky.
D.C. National Guard Commanding General William Walker said the Capitol Police Chief sounded frantic when he called at 1:49 p.m.
Where he informed me that the security perimeter of the United States Capitol had been breached.
Walker readied his troops but couldn't send them for more than 3 hours.
I didn't get approval until a little bit after 5.
The Defense Department's Robert Salesis said approval came sooner but was improperly communicated.
I think that's an issue.
Military leaders at one point hesitated, the witnesses said, because they questioned whether it would look good to send troops to the Capitol. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Also on Capitol Hill, FBI Director Christopher Wray, who answered questions about the intelligence failures leading up to the insurrection. ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
In his first appearance before Congress since the January 6th insurrection, FBI Director Christopher Wray was specific and blunt about who was responsible.
Quite a number who what we would call sort of militia violent extremists, the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers. We've already identified individuals who advocate for what you would call sort of white supremacy.
A fact confirmed by the only Capitol police officer who's publicly described in detail the horror of that day in a television exclusive with ABC News.
There was a large number of people in that crowd that were racist.
Officer Dunn said that mob fought viciously.
I'm exhausted. My shirt's drenched in sweat, pepper spray. I got blood and cuts on my knuckles.
And one of the conspiracies claiming it was really left-wing radicals posing as Trump supporters who attacked the Capitol.
Do you have any evidence that the Capitol attack was organized by, quote, fake Trump protesters?
We have not seen evidence of that.
The FBI director was pressed on why a key piece of intelligence warning that right-wing radicals were coming to Washington to attack the Capitol did not result in more robust security. Wray says the information obtained the day before the insurrection was put in the hands of D.C. officials.
That information was quickly disseminated and communicated with our partners, including the U.S. Capitol Police, including Metro PD, in not one, not two, but three different ways.
At the White House, the Biden administration pressed this week on how they plan to curb the influx of migrants trying to enter the U.S. Many of those migrants include unaccompanied children. Here again, ABC's Andy Field.
The Biden administration between a rock and a hard place when it comes to asylum seekers.
We are not encouraging people to come.
Spokesperson Jen Psaki acknowledging the desperation many face coming to the U.S., but says they must first fix problems left by the last president. Still,
we also believe differently from the past administration that we are not going to turn away kids who are under 18.
Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
Outside of Washington, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo under scrutiny after three women accuse him of sexual misconduct.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it.
But Cuomo also said this week he won't resign. New York's attorney general is investigating. But Cuomo's also facing an investigation into whether his office underreported COVID nursing home deaths. More from ABC's Andrea Fujii.
The New York Times and Wall Street Journal both reporting that top Cuomo aides altered the number of deaths from the virus at long-term care facilities on a state health department report in June, leaving out those who died in hospitals after becoming sick in nursing homes. The result? An undercounting of nursing home resident deaths by the thousands. Cuomo's office and the Department of Health quickly releasing a statement defending their decision not to include the hospital deaths, saying in part, the decision was made to initially release the report without the out-of-facility data and to later update the report to include the out-of-facility deaths and believe fully in its conclusions that the primary driver that introduced COVID into the nursing homes was spread by its staff. It comes as three women accused the governor of unwanted advances. Charlotte Bennett spoke out on CBS. She is one of the three women who've come forward.
I thought he's trying to sleep with me. The governor is trying to sleep with me. And I'm deeply uncomfortable. And I have to get out of this room as soon as possible.
Now facing two scandals, critics are calling on Cuomo to resign or be impeached. State lawmakers could vote on whether to strip Cuomo of his emergency powers related to COVID-19 decisions. But a Quinnipiac University poll shows that most New Yorkers agree Cuomo should serve out his term.
It's been weeks since winter weather and extreme cold hit parts of the South, but people in Jackson, Mississippi are still dealing with the aftermath. ABC's Victor Akendo says the city's outdated infrastructure has left thousands without running water or clean drinking water.
I went to a water distribution site, which is a real lifeline here these days, and you just see these long lines where people are getting two types of water. You got drinking water in bottles, and then you see the huge tanks, and that's non-potable water. That's there just so people can flush their toilets.
They might be severed from the rest of the royal family, but Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, speaking out in an interview airing this week. But it comes amidst a rare move by the palace. ABC's James Longman has more on the allegations against Markle and the promo released ahead of the interview.
I don't know how they could expect that after all of this time, we would still just be silent if there is an active role that the firm is playing in perpetuating falsehoods about us.
Saying she no longer fears telling her truth.
If that comes with risk of losing things, I mean, there's a lot that's been lost already.
Buckingham Palace, in an unprecedented move, opened an investigation into bullying allegations against Meghan. Buckingham Palace saying in part, the royal household has had a dignity at work policy in place for a number of years and does not and will not tolerate bullying or harassment in the workplace. The allegations brought to light in an article in the Times of London saying an official complaint was lodged that Meghan Markle drove two personal assistants out of the household and was undermining the confidence of a third staff member. Other unnamed staffers accusing her of emotional cruelty and humiliation. A spokesperson for the Duchess, who's currently pregnant with her second child, calls the report a smear campaign, saying she's saddened by this latest attack on her character.
The couple has been vocal about their troubles dealing with negative press from the British tabloids, even filing several lawsuits against various newspapers for invasion of privacy.
Coming up...
We're going to wash this year right off of our hands.
Using new technology and classic songs to deliver an immediate message when World News This Week continues.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
An unlikely pair of social media stars using jazz standards and Broadway hits to remind people that we're not free of the pandemic yet. The Minnesota couple, who have been away from their children and grandchildren the entire time, sharing some good news to their followers. ABC's David Muir has their story.
Joel and Harmony Kaplan from Edina, Minnesota, two children, four grandchildren, and due to the pandemic, they have not seen their family, but they are still singing.
All the workers on the front lines, do it, let's do it, let's all wear masks.
In fact, they've been making videos, posting them on TikTok, Instagram.
We're gonna wash this year right off of our hands.
They now have a following, their latest.
Well, hello, viewers. It's so nice to have you here with us again.
Delivering their own news.
We're feeling swell, viewers, can you tell, viewers? We both got our second doses of the Pfizer vaccine.
With hope for everyone else, too.
So when it's your turn, people, give it a go, people. Just say, oh no, I'm not giving away my shot.
Joel, and yes, Harmony, sending us a message, too.
Oh, well, hello, David. Well, hello, David. It's so nice to be on the news with you tonight.
It's a first, and they also wanted to say this.
We just want to tell everyone, get your shots when it's your turn. They work. It means you're going to get to see your loved ones. We can get off these screens, but keep wearing your mask and washing your hands.
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Joy Piazza. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.